Welcome into Locked On Knicks. We got a very cool episode for you guys today. First part of a two-parter because he was so generous with his time. We got Jonathan Wasserman, who is the lead NBA scout and draft writer for Bleacher Report on today. Gavin, I think we had a really good discussion with him, starting off, of course, where else but on the guards available in the lottery.
Yeah, and there's a big debate between Cole Anthony and Killian Hayes if the Knicks stay around 6, 7, 8, where they're most likely to end up. We get into that, why Jonathan is pretty high, actually, on the Knicks taking Cole. And then a big philosophical question on Anthony Edwards. Do you take the guy who's going to be good for you right away, who's a lock to put up big stats, or do you take a chance on someone who's going to be a little less highly regarded coming out of the draft, but in the best version of your team will contribute to winning long-term? All that and more next with Jonathan Wasserman.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts with a five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Up and tucks left. Now fires a three.
And he's good. And he's fouled. It counts. And he makes it.
Anthony for three.
All right, welcome into Locked On Knicks. Alex Wolf and Gavin Shaw here. And as mentioned, we do have Jonathan Wasserman, who is the lead NBA scout and draft writer for Bleacher Report. We're going to get pretty much right into it because we got a lot to talk about. So just as a reminder, we're going to talk about the Knicks lottery pick first. And the Knicks did end up with the number six odds, which gives them, ironically, not a very high chance to stay at number six. They have a 37.2% chance at landing in the top four, only a 8.6% chance to stay at six, a 50.4% chance to land at 7 or 8, and a 3.8% chance to land at 9 or 10, which I think the chance of being at 10 is a fraction of 1%. So hopefully that does not come to be. But at any rate, you know, we got a lot to talk about. So Jonathan, we want to start off first. Like, you put out a DraftBuzz article about a week and a half ago talking about teams potentially trying to trade down given the lack of a sure thing at the top of this draft. Do you think if the Knicks stay where they are and land in their most likely spots, which is the 6, 7, or 8 pick, do you see them as a candidate to trade up potentially? Because their apparent love for LaMelo Ball is kind of out there in sort of a way that I don't know if we've seen since maybe like Steph Curry, when the Knicks were talking him up as much as they were. So do you think they would be candidates?
You know what? I've thought about it a lot. And it's like, would they give up Mitchell or RJ to move up for LaMelo Ball? I'd say probably if they were to get, they would probably only even think about this if they got the number one pick. If they can get the number one pick in the trade and they can guarantee themselves LaMelo. I don't know what they would do. It's definitely going to be a conversation that would come up if they engage in conversations with the team that wins the lottery. I'm kind of torn on what they should do. You know, if they should throw Mitchell Robinson into a deal for LaMelo, I think I would actually go as far as to say personally I would do it because I buy LaMelo. I think he's an NBA star. I think he's not only is an NBA star, but he's a kind of exactly what the Knicks need in terms of a point guard, but also somebody who really, like, he's so special in terms of his passing and getting guys involved. And I know he's got this reputation of, like, you know, me first and he's a showboat, but he's so good at making the game easier for other guys around him. And that's really what his bread and butter is. And for a team that really doesn't have that many good players, you know, it's good to have a guy like LaMelo who can make the game easier for him. And so as much as I like Mitchell Robinson and I like RJ Barrett, you know, I think their ceilings are only so high in today's league. You know, Barrett to me is not the guy who takes the Knicks to the next level, even in a couple of years. And Robinson, I think, is a really fun piece to have, and he could be the center on a winning team. But again, as a big guy who is mostly just a catch and dunker offensively, I'm so drawn to the fact of having a point guard like LaMelo on the team. So it's going to be an interesting debate to see if the Knicks are willing to trade up, what they'd be willing to trade, and obviously who gets that first pick.
Yeah, it'll certainly be interesting. I think most Knicks fans would tell you, maybe I'm speaking out of turn here, they'd probably trade RJ before they traded Mitchell Robinson. I'm certainly in that camp. I think Mitch is a slightly more unique piece with what he brings as a rim runner and a rim protector on the other end. But John, I don't know, at least to me, the implication of that on LaMelo Ball, if you're that high on him, you got to buy his jump shot to some degree, because I mean, I think, as you know, in your scouting report, that's sort of the obvious swing skill with him. I mean, and whether or not there's a cap on what he could be, or if he could end up being like a top 10 player in the league at some point down the road. And we brought on a bunch of people who covered the draft. We've gotten mixed feedback in terms of how good of a shooter he can be long term. What do you think his upside is as a shooter, given that he seemingly has pretty good touch, but there's just a lot of stuff mechanically that's off right now?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to be a shooter. I think he's going to be a shot maker, which yeah, really is just like, we're talking about percentages here. I think he can make, over 2 threes a game, just maybe at like a 34% clip. And I'm not so worried about the percentages. You know, he can make those shots. And of course, if you look at the percentages overseas, he shot 25% in 12 games. But if you throw in the 13th game, which was like the exhibition game, he hit 4 threes in that game. And suddenly his percentages jumps to like 30%. And, 18 years old, he clearly has three-point range. Get some NBA coaching under him, fix, tweak some of the mechanics a little bit. I think by his, mid-20s, early 20s, he's going to be somebody who could shoot in the mid-30s in terms of percentages and make a couple threes per game. And I think that's fine when you throw into the fact that that's going to be like the worst part of his game. And when that's complemented by his playmaking ability, and I think he's going to be a very good finisher at the rim. I know he's not so strong, and sometimes he struggles with contact right now, but if you buy the really good finishes he's had so far, like his acrobatics around the rim and his ability to use both hands, I mean, I think he, and throwing his floater touch, I think he's going to be a pretty good scorer. And then with the shot making outside, even if he doesn't have the 40% three-point clip. So, in terms of his ceiling as a shooter, 35% from downtown, 37%, on 1.5 to 2 threes per game.
Yeah, I thought it was a great point that a friend of ours, Prez, who came on the podcast, made, that you don't necessarily have to be the most efficient shooter from deep as a lead ball handler. And obviously the degree of difficulty is so much harder because you're not getting as many spot up attempts, and a lot of what you're doing is off the dribble. And I've sort of pushed back on that a while ago, but looking at what Luka Doncic did this year, that was sort of the confirmation of the model. The guy who got like a ton of attempts up, I think somewhere close to 10 a game, only shot about 32%, but he took so many, and he took so many with a high degree of difficulty that it still was enough of a threat that his off the dribble stuff and his passing worked. And obviously if LaMelo's even 80% of him, that's, I mean, the best player the Knicks have had in a very long time. Though if the Knicks sit back, Jonathan, and don't move up in the lottery, we know in your latest mock draft, you had them at 8 via Tankathon simulation, and you had them taking Cole Anthony over Killian Hayes. And I know on your personal board, you have Killian Hayes way above Cole Anthony, but why do you think Cole would make more sense for the Knicks, or at least the Knicks would think that he'd be the better pick?
Yeah, I think they're going to weigh the two. It's going to be an interesting debate. And I think we have to take a look at this front office, the new people that were put in place. I'm not really sure how familiar they all are with Killian Hayes, how many times they've seen him in person. I just think that there's a comfort level with Cole. I'm guessing Scott Perry has seen him plenty before he got to North Carolina. I live in New York City. You see him all over the place. So he's here a lot. And then, of course, his dad being Greg, there's got to be some type of relationship in there. And with Killian, he's not a good shooter. I mean, that's really the big question mark with him. And you throw Killian into a lineup, or not even to a lineup, but into a core that you're building with Mitchell, RJ, Killian, your three top guys, and none of them are good shooters. It's hard to pull the trigger on that. Or I would at least picture them thinking it's hard to pull the trigger on that. Whereas Cole Anthony, like I said, the familiarity they have with him, he's got plenty of size. We've seen size and explosiveness for the position, which technically, theoretically points to upside. And he's a, a, a definite shot maker. Like, he's going to come in and make shots from the outside right away. Again, forget the percentages. He's one of the best pull-up shooters in the country. He was one of the best isolation scorers in the country. We've seen Perry, and I don't know, again, how much authority Perry has in making this call, but we've seen Perry kind of overlook inefficiency in the draft towards long-term potential. And I think that's going to be the case with Cole. They're going to kind of overlook the fact that he had an inefficient year at North Carolina. He had poor teammates, poor spacing. And they're going to look at kind of how he came out of high school, kind of like what the Boston Celtics do. You know, Jaylen Brown didn't have an efficient year. Jason Tatum wasn't a no-brainer coming out of college. But they look back at his overall track record. Did he back to Cincinnati when he was a young kid? And I think that's what they'd end up doing with Cole Anthony. Rather than take a chance on a 19-year-old point guard from France who struggles to shoot, struggles with decision-making, I just think they'd feel safer going with Cole.
It doesn't matter if you're a professional athlete, a stay-at-home parent, or you spend 8 hours a day in an uncomfortable office chair. Everyone needs support to make it through the day, now more than ever, when so many of us are stuck inside for long, long hours. Your mind needs a little bit of a break. Luckily, our friends at CBDMD have an amazing duo that can help you relax, regroup, and recharge when life gets chaotic. CBD Freeze with Menthol is an award-winning product that offers instant cooling relief for muscles and joints in a convenient and easy-to-use roller or shareable squeeze tube. CBD Recover combines CBD with inflammation-fighting compounds like Arnica and vitamin B6 to give you the support you need when it matters most. And to make it even easier to try this amazing duo of topicals and everything else CBDMD has to offer, they're offering all of our listeners 25% off your next order when you use the promo code NBA at checkout. Once again, that's CBDMD.com, promo code NBA for 25% off your purchase of superior CBD oil products from CBDMD.
Yeah, you know, I think I've asked people this before, and you just sort of alluded to it, but how much of a role do you think that the just historically bad UNC team coupled with an injury played in, like, Cole Anthony not having as good of a year as people were? I mean, when I was reading some preseason pieces, there were some people saying that if he made a good enough case, he could have made a case for the number one pick this year.
Yeah, I was wondering.
And things just didn't shake out for him that way because he was injured for a good part of the year. And then the times when he wasn't injured, you know, North Carolina was just so bad. I mean, I think Roy Williams had a quote at one point basically saying that he was like, that he wished that he wished that Cole Anthony could pass to Cole Anthony on some plays because, you know, there's just nobody else on the team that can make shots, which is a pretty, like, incendiary quote for a coach to make.
North Carolina ranked like 300 and something in the country in 3-point shooting. The spacing was like, you know, he deserves some blame, Cole, because he gets some tunnel vision when he gets into the lane and he tries to force it. But then you also have to think about, like, he has to force it because there's nowhere else to go. He carried a 30% usage rate. He just carried a huge workload. And I think if he had some better guys around him, you'd see a better assist to turnover ratio, a better field goal percentage. I really don't think the teams, even though I will say that there are scouts who've jumped off the wagon and they do question him. Like, there's no doubt that there are some scouts who probably have him in the mid-first round on their boards. But I do think that there are going to be plenty of scouts and general managers out there who also recognize the situation that he was in, how bad the spacing was, how much he had to force the issue. He's also personality wise, he's cocky, you know, he's a talker, and that may turn some guys off as well. It really is in the eye of the beholder. For me, I'm really kind of trying to put things in perspective and recognize the situation he was in. I don't know exactly what Perry and Leon Rose are thinking. But again, I think that they're going to, in my personal opinion, just using my own judgment, I think they're going to kind of overlook the inefficiency this year for a player that they've probably been scouting for a couple of years now.
This is a tangent, but I'm always mystified when teams like Duke and North Carolina can't find three guys who can shoot the basketball, and Belmont has six dudes hitting over 40% from three. Right. Like, you would always think, like, you could just, especially like Duke, like you could find one dude, and like the year they had RJ Zion and a couple other guys, and just nothing. Anyways, that's neither here nor there. I'm interested what you think about Killian Hayes's upside as a shooter? Because I know a friend of the show, Spencer Perlman, who I think also has Killian Hayes as his second guy on his board, was noting that he really liked his ability to create space on a step back and his balance on those plays. And a lot of times the bigger issues were coming in catch and shoot situations. I know just going over his stats quickly, I got a little more confidence just based on his free throw shooting, which we've long heard translates a little bit better than 3-point percentage to the NBA. And he was at 91% from the line while only being 29% from three. But I'm interested what you think of all that and whether or not you think he could be a plus shooter long term, because to me, if that's true, he would clearly be the pick for the Knicks.
Yeah, I don't know about a plus shooter. When I think about his shooting, I kind of think about De'Aaron Fox coming out of Kentucky. And he's not going to be a 40% shooter, but I think he has the potential to get to good or average. And then he's so good in the rest of his game, and that's kind of why I have him so high. He's probably the most well-rounded guard in this draft. But his shooting, yeah, he's above 85% from the free throw line every season. He's a touch guy. He's got such soft touch. And you just hope that eventually it extends out to the three-point range. And I love the improvement he showed from one year to the next. I know it's not dramatic, but he made 14 threes a year ago. This year he doubled it to 30 threes while continuing shooting 88% from the free throw line. And then you talked about his ability to create separation. Another big jump this year with his footwork off the dribble. And that's kind of big for him because he's not really explosive. That's one of the knocks on him, is that he's really got to be precise with his skill and execution to compensate for the fact that he just doesn't have that blow-by burst to get by guys, but also around the basket. But he also finished, I think, around 60% of his shots around the basket. So he's just, he's good in a lot of areas. And I think given his age and his trajectory, from one year to the next, that he's a guy who's going to continue to get better. And if you listen to him interview, he gets pretty locked in. He's a pretty smart guy the way he talks about the game. And so he's somebody who I'm just going to buy to continue to get better. And I love his foundation as it is. Again, the question mark with him and the Knicks is and it's kind of the question mark I have with a lot of these point guards with the Knicks. The Knicks really don't give any point guard coming out of this draft a good environment to develop. And that was kind of the case with Frank. It's just you wish some of these young point guards would go to a good team that could take pressure off him and he could play to his strengths just as a passer and let the game come to him. But New York right now, he'd have too much of a workload. And that's kind of my worry with Killian Hayes. But at the same time, in a vacuum, evaluating him, passing, finishing, the pace he plays at, I think he's a pretty smart defender. The improvement he's shown creating his own shot and making his own shot. I'm buying Killian Hayes. He's somebody I'd rather take a chance on early in this draft.
Just a quick reminder, today's show is brought to you by MyBookie. Say it with me now. Sports are back, baby. I've been waiting for this day since March, and now that it's here, I've only got one thing on my mind. MyBookie. MyBookie is a home run, slam dunk, triple overtime, game-winning shot, all wrapped up into one. I love it, you love it, and that should be all you need to hear in order to start betting today. MyBookie has up-to-the-minute odds on all your favorite teams. And considering Major League Baseball just started, NBA is in full swing again, the NHL is going, there's never been a better time to start playing. With MyBookie, it's easy. You bet, you win, and they pay. Feeling good about your team's chances this year? Obviously not the Knicks. They're out of it. But let's say, maybe you root for the Pelicans or the Grizzlies or something. I don't know. They're kind of long shots right now, but they might be worth looking into. Be sure to check out MyBookie's World Series future bets and NBA Finals future bets. Nothing shows you believe in your squad like betting on them before the season's even begun. Of course, you can maybe bet on the Mets or the Yankees. Maybe not the Mets right now. But why stop with baseball? Smart bettors are always looking towards the future, and in this case, that means basketball, hockey, and football as well. Football is still slated to go off without a hitch. MyBookie is already accepting bets on all your favorite NFL games. And there's never been a better time to start exploring the world of online sports betting than right now, with basically all the sports going on at once. Join today and MyBookie will match your deposit 100%. Plus, they'll toss you a free $10 MLB future wager. All you got to do is enter promo code LOCKEDONNBA when signing up. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDONNBA when you sign up at MyBookie. Remember, at MyBookie, the terms are simple. You bet, you win, they pay. So I want to talk about someone that I think I've even forgotten to bring up on other draft pods. I think because he's become kind of a forgotten man in a way. But Tyrese Haliburton, I feel like maybe at this point, he seemed like he was kind of a fast riser for a minute there. And then now is getting sort of slept on and just maybe not. I don't know if his draft stock is necessarily tanking or anything, but I feel like people aren't talking about him quite as much at this point. Maybe because everybody just kind of got all their takes out. It's been a really long offseason. So we would have normally completed the draft two times over by now and,
right. You
know, done summer league and everything else. But I mean, do you think that he is getting sort of slept on as a potential upside player? Like, it seems like the general consensus on him is like steady floor, but possibly kind of a low ceiling.
Yeah.
I guess maybe age plays a part in that, or like years of experience, but he is only slightly older than Cole Anthony, who is just a freshman, you know, at just over 20 years old. So, I mean, what are your general thoughts on him? I don't know. I feel like I have some opinions on him, but I haven't really like asked anybody for like in-depth analysis. I feel like I just know him on the surface level.
Yeah. So Haliburton he's like the high floor guy of this draft, right? He's going to fit in anywhere he goes. He's one of the best passers in the draft, and passing always translates. He also ranked in the 99th percentile as a spot up player, shot 49% on catch and shoots. So you take into account his catch and shooting and his passing. You can play him on the ball. You can play him off the ball. He's just a guy who's going to fit in anywhere and throw into the fact that he's like the highest character guy you've ever met. He's just like such a likable person. And he's just an easy fit anywhere. And the question is, right, how high is his ceiling? He never gets to the free throw line. He can't really beat anyone off the dribble. He doesn't have a pull-up game. So there's a lot of questions about how well can he score at the NBA level. And it may not matter depending on who you put around him. You know, it reminds me a little bit of Lonzo Ball is the guy I kind of use. Obviously, there's some differences here and there. But that's the type of guy. And I think if you put the right guys around him, you know, I like Haliburton, honestly, as a secondary playmaker at the two as opposed to the one. Although at the one, he's a good decision maker. He'll run the offense efficiently and whatnot. But I think you get the best of Haliburton if he's alongside another point guard who could put more pressure on defenses by penetrating, because he's just not very explosive off the dribble. Like, he doesn't beat anyone. He doesn't score in isolation. But he could just pick you apart with his passing, his pace. And again, he's got this catch and shoot three ball despite these really weird mechanics on his shot. But it goes in. But they're not really conducive for shooting off the dribble. I don't ever see him being a guy who's going to like come off a ball screen and knock down that 16 footer or step back in the mid range and hit a jumper at the end of a shot clock. But he's such a good decision maker, a good passer. Like, you can't lose with Haliburton. If you take you can take Haliburton anywhere in this draft, and he'll never be considered a bad pick. The question is, like, how good can he be in this league if he's probably never going to average more than, you know, 14 points a game and be a starting guard? But by the way, NBA guys love him. And I've put him top seven in my mock drafts, like every time, like between the Pistons, between the Knicks, between the Hawks. I think he's going to go to like one of these teams. Someone is just going to say, okay, there's so much uncertainty in this draft. There's plenty of certainty with Haliburton. I know that he's going to be an asset to my franchise. The question is how valuable.
Yeah, it's interesting, or it's going to be interesting to see how big the Knicks are willing to think, or how forward thinking they're willing to be. Because to your point on the Cole Anthony versus Killian Hayes conversation, Cole's nominally a better fit for what they have now on the roster. But at least to me, I don't think that's how you should draft. I think you should draft for the guy with the premise, the best version of this team and the best version of our current core with guys we think we can get down the road. Who's going to fit into that team? And to me, the clear answer to that is a guy like Haliburton or a guy like Hayes over someone like Cole Anthony. And obviously that gets into a bunch of other stuff, and maybe Anthony translates better than someone like I think. But I don't know. I would tend to go with that type of philosophy and maybe get someone like Haliburton with the idea and saying, hey, we're also going to throw a ton of money at Fred VanVleet to come south and come play for the Knicks. Another guy I sort of have bigger picture questions about is Anthony Edwards. And this sort of gets into, a drafting philosophy question, John. And with a guy like Edwards, who's obviously like top tier athlete, plus size, pretty good shooter, showed some flashes as a passer, but by and large, as admittedly an extremely young freshman, was a pretty bad decision maker, had a questionable motor. And this is a question that really has no answer, because it seems like teams who put millions and millions of dollars into it can't figure it out on a year-to-year basis. But what do teams look for to discern whether he's another Andrew Wiggins or Zach LaVine, which obviously isn't the worst thing in the world, or someone like Ben Simmons, who obviously had similar questions coming out of LSU, but then translated really well to the NBA. And I know that's not a perfect question, because Simmons was obviously like elite as a passer and a defender. But I guess, how do you deduce when it's just a young guy in a bad situation that kind of give up, but they're going to be way better in the NBA versus someone like Wiggins, who the problems he had at Kansas have sort of lasted him through the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, there's no like straight answer for that. I mean, I think if we're talking about Anthony Edwards in this draft, the fact that there's not much competition, there's not like many obvious stars in this draft, I think teams are going to put less stock into his inefficiency and the bad shot selection. Like, they're going to see a guy who's 6'5", 225, who just averaged 19 points a game and has not only the physical talent, but like skill-wise. He's unbelievable at creating his own shot and making his own shot. And you know, my big question and what I've kind of said all along is like, does he know how to apply the talent and skill that he has to winning and impact? And I've used Zach LaVine as a comparison to him. Obviously their bodies are different, but like, they're both guys who can put up 25 points a game and lose every single one of the games that they play because their styles are just not conducive for winning. And Edwards, I talked to a scout the other day. He's like, Edwards could have the lowest basketball IQ of any potential number one pick I've ever scouted. But in this draft, like other than LaMelo, there's just like nobody else at the top with the star potential. And so I think teams more or less will buy talent, just like they did with Andrew Wiggins. Like, talent, you just can't teach the talent. You can hope to coach his decision-making and improve it over time, but you can't teach the talent. And I think teams will be more willing to bet on that talent. And that's the same thing with Anthony Edwards, who is, I think I'm still in the process of sifting out my board, but I have him 3 or 4 with Onyeka Okongwu. I just can't get myself to put him at 1, because if I'm taking him number 1 overall, you kind of want your offense to eventually run through him, and I just don't trust an offense efficiently running through Edwards' shot selection, his style, which is hero jumpers, and he just cannot resist those urges. I mean, there are some, you go through his clips, I mean, there are some highlights of him dribbling for 20 seconds and then launching like a 30-foot pull-up without even looking at anybody else. And I know he's 18 years old, and that could change, but just having watched throughout high school and where he is now, it's the way he's wired, I just have such a hard time believing that he could change enough for me. But at the same time, in this draft, I also think that he's going to be a guy who drops 20 a game in the NBA. And so it's really hard to balance out, you know, like how to value the guaranteed production versus how your team is going to fare with him having the ball as much as he's going to.
Yeah, I guess that brings up an interesting question that I just sort of, you know, I was thinking up things I wanted to discuss for today. And I was like, you know, of all the players in the draft, it seems like a lot of them are pretty coachable and, you know, have good basketball IQ and all that. And mostly it's the skill, whereas Edwards seems to have all the physical tools and skills in the world, but none of the basketball IQ, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
Do you think that in theory, you know, if the Knicks jump to, let's say, because the Knicks, you know, as you mentioned, almost a 40% chance to get into the top 4. If they end up at, say, the 3 or 4 pick and Edwards is still on the board, do you think that actually landing with the Knicks, I mean, you just mentioned it's the Knicks are sort of a weird place to get a potential point guard prospect to try to develop them because you're thrusting so much on them at once. They can't really be eased into it, whatever. But do you think that with the hiring of Thibodeau now, who obviously has his reputation as sort of a drill sergeant and a no bullshit kind of coach that's going to, you know, try to get the best out of every single player that he has, do you think that in a way the Knicks might actually be one of the better situations near the top of the draft for a guy like Edwards to land in, other than maybe obviously like Golden State, which, you know, right. Obviously they have the infrastructure. They just had a weird year because of, you know, injury circumstances and stuff. But out of the kind of perennial bad teams that are in the draft this year, I feel like maybe the Knicks, because of the new coaching hire, might actually be a good spot for Edwards.
Yeah, so I'm kind of torn on it, right? Because like, Edwards is a guy who needs the ball. And he'd get it in New York, and he'd also get it and be held accountable under Thibodeau for his mistakes. You know, he wouldn't have the opportunity to sit there and dance for 20 seconds and then launch his step back. And he'd have the opportunity to play through mistakes under Thibodeau, right? That's kind of like his reputation. He plays guys a lot. And I think he's going to be willing to play rookies, particularly in New York, because there's not many other good players around him. On the other hand, you know, I always like the fact that maybe if he goes to Golden State, and that's another place where, like, under Draymond Green, like, there's no way he's going to get away with some of the shit that he got away with in high school, in college, and just playing on a team with Steph and Clay. Like, he's not going to have, literally not going to have the opportunity to dance around with the ball. So he'd have to play to his strengths. His shot selection would naturally tighten. On the other hand, some of the games, I saw him live a couple times in high school, and the defense in those games clearly focused on, like, preventing him from getting the ball. And he kind of just, like, didn't know how to play without the ball. You know, he stood there. He was not – he had, like, 2 points in one of the games that I saw in high school. This is a guy who could go number one overall.
Was that the game when they played Lujai? Literally the same thing happened. It was in Springfield. And,
yes.
And they dealt with him the whole game, and he just, like, sat out, basically.
It was the Hoopall Classic. Yeah, I was sitting there courtside. And I think that was the first time I've seen him live. I think they played zone. They took the ball out of his hands. He was like, he forgot he was in the game. And this is a guy who, you know, we're looking at as a potential number one overall candidate. And even this year, some games, he just doesn't really know how to score off the ball. And he loses rhythm, and he loses, like, interest in what's going on. And so that's my fear with him going to a team like Golden State. And then when you put him in New York, he's going to have the ball. He's going to be engaged. And so that's a positive. And I'm a big believer in giving rookies on-ball reps and letting them make mistakes and learning from those mistakes, you know, trial and error. And then on the other side, like, the devil on my left shoulder is like, good God, you put him in New York, it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a disaster. He's got no veteran leadership under, you know, around him. He's going to go back to those bad habits of taking, you know, these terrible jump shots early in clocks. So it's going to be such an interesting call. I don't think the Knicks have the luxury of passing on a guy like Edwards, you know, and nitpicking at the idea of, like, you know, how inefficient he could be early on. But yeah, man, I could see both sides of it, and I'm really not sure where I fall on how it's going to play out if, like, he did go to the Knicks.
Okay, that's all for today. I think we mentioned in the intro that this was going to be a two-parter because Jonathan was so nice with his time. Made sure to give us really thorough analysis on all the guys we were asking about. So we will be back, I think, in a couple days. I think we're going to stagger this episode. So we will be back, though, with Jonathan Wasserman talking about some of the other guys in the lottery the Knicks could be considering. Denny Avdija, Isaac Okoro, a little bit of Devin Vassell. And then we talk about some of the later guys that the Knicks could consider as well. Whether it might be worth moving up to try to get Alexei Pokuševski, you know, somewhere in the middle of the first round. And then also some players that we were intrigued by and some players that Jonathan's intrigued by late in the draft around that Clippers pick and around that Hornets second round pick that the Knicks could look at in this draft. So that will be coming up next time we are back with Jonathan Wasserman of Bleacher Report.